Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin.
Just another quick announcement. Chicago True Crime Podcast Festival, Saturday, July 13th at the Marriott downtown. I will be there with like 80 other true crime podcasters. Crime Writers On, The Vanished, Court Junkie, The Fall Line, Missing More Murray. You know these people. It's a full day event, so that should give you all day to meet all of your favorite podcasts. To find out more, head over to truecrimepodcastfestival.com or go find them on social media. I will see you there.
If you're in Canada, especially if you can get to Toronto, I will be joining other podcasters for a special event on August 18th at 2 p.m. at The Royal. To find out more about True Crime Podcasts live in Toronto, go to theroyal.to and navigate through the schedule to August 18th. Darkness, tragedy, pain. These things hide within every beloved institution, and most people are none the wiser. Every week, the Parcast original, The Dark Side Of, pulls back the curtain to bring you the most salacious stories and disturbing details behind everything we hold most dear. Episodes of The Dark Side Of take seemingly innocuous topics and expose the dirty secrets that you were never meant to know. You'll learn the dark side of Hollywood, where on the set of The Wizard of Oz, numerous accidents sent actors to the hospital, and director and Nazi sympathizer Victor Fleming reportedly beat Judy Garland. The dark side of music, where Elvis Presley was so obsessed with death that he brought friends to a mortuary at 3 a.m. to look at corpses. You've heard the good side, now hear the dark side of. Search for and subscribe to The Dark Side Of on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, search The Dark Side Of or visit parcast.com/darkside to listen now.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Tonight's case is a mystery. I like mysteries. We have a man who dived down into a cave and disappeared. Either he suffered a horrible accident, or he fell victim to foul play, or he faked his own death. And he's living a luxurious life in some foreign country now. Those are our options. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the mysterious disappearance of Ben McDaniel.
This was August 18th, 2010. Ben McDaniel was diving in the Vortex Spring, which is near Ponce de Leon. It's in Florida. It was around 7:30 p.m. He's never seen again. 2 days later, an employee notices his truck is in the parking lot. It's untouched. It's locked. The same employee had witnessed Ben diving. So everything pointed to Ben had drowned in this underwater cave that he was going into. So they scoured all the divers around and they all went into the spring trying to find his body. But they couldn't recover any body. They couldn't find most of his equipment or anything. So that's where we're left off, is he goes diving into a cave and no one sees him again. Now, Vortex Spring, that just sounds kind of ominous to me. What is this place, Aaron?
Well, Vortex Spring is a popular spot for divers. The way I understand it is it's the largest diving facility in Florida, and it's changed ownership over the years here and there for different reasons. To give you an idea about why it's popular, though, one I think is the shape of it. The Vortex has this large bowl shape where you dive in at, and it goes pretty deep down, and at the bottom of that, there's a gate. You need to have special permission to get past the gate because it gets dangerous. Because depending on the depth you go, you might require a different mix of air in your tanks. And you need to understand what to do when things don't go right.
It's not even a permission. You have to leave your certified diver certificate license at the front desk to get the key to go through that gate.
Certifications are important. Look at it this way. You can read a book all day long, but Justin, working in IT, you met people who didn't have hands-on experience. They only had book experience. And then they were asked to do certain activities that you probably thought were menial, but then they couldn't perform those duties because, well, they knew the concepts, but they didn't know the practice.
Absolutely not. I mean, I looked into getting Microsoft certified and A+ certified, Network Plus certified, all these different things. But I was already doing the job and running circles around people that were certified. And after reading about the licensing from Microsoft and everything, it became apparent to me that it was kind of a racket. But when it's your life on the line, I would hope that you would take some training, get certified to dive, get certified to cave dive, which is a whole other level of diving. Ben was an avid diver. He started diving at a young age, but then gave the hobby up for most of his life and then took it up later on. But he wasn't a certified cave diver.
Yeah, there are several certifications he would have needed to get. It doesn't seem like money was an issue. He seemed to be somewhat successful with his construction business that he owned. And then his family seemed to support him if he needed money, any additional money as well. I guess we should kind of cover Ben's family a bit to give you some background, because it may have an influence on how you look at this case. You know, you say, okay, so someone disappeared, but who were they? And the more you know about them, the more you feel like you can make that call. Ben's parents were Shelby and Patty McDaniel. He had three brothers, Paul, Tim, and Brad. Now, Ben and his family suffered a tragedy on September 14th, 2008, when his 22-year-old brother, Paul, died. And it was said that he had died from having multiple strokes at the same time in both hemispheres of his brain.
Now, this hit Ben pretty hard because he and Paul were very close. They used to do mountain climbing and rock climbing together. Lots of what I would call outdoorsy, adventurous things, borderlining adrenaline junkie kind of stuff. They were best friends. So when his brother dies, this is devastating to him.
After Paul died, Ben and his brother Tim started the Paul A. McDaniel Stroke and Organ Donation Research Foundation in 2009. Now, I don't know that this exists anymore, but what I do know is that Paul was passionate about rock climbing, mountain climbing. He would even climb frozen waterfalls. At the time, he had been attending university. He was majoring in finance, hoping to get into law. And according to his dad, Shelby, Paul was listed as being an organ, bone, and tissue donor, and more than 80 people's lives were affected positively because of his donations.
That's pretty cool. Moral of the story is donate.
You can't do anything with those organs when you die. I think it's pretty incredible. I know I've marked my little boxes on my driver's license saying I'm an organ donor.
If it's against your religion, then don't do it. But for everyone else, go ahead.
Well said.
It's a good thing.
But if you are reading up on this case, you may come across some information on the internet that says that Paul didn't die of any kind of stroke, that he died because of an overdose. Now, I haven't been able to find proof of that. Justin, did you find anything?
No, I think there's somebody named like Princess Buttercup or something that says they saw his autopsy report and he died of a drug overdose, but we can't find his autopsy report and we weren't going to take the time to do a Freedom of Information Act just to find out how his brother died, because it's not that pertinent to the story, but there is a tie in here. So it's either that he died of a stroke or he died of a drug overdose, but the parents and everywhere you look say it was a stroke. So if it really was, like they say, a drug overdose, then are the parents shameful about that fact? Are they trying to cover it up? Something to that effect. Again, I don't want to give this much credence because I just believe the parents and how he died.
Or we could leave it as a lot of people's lives were improved because he had donated his organs and his tissue and his bones.
Let's find the positive in it. But this had a detrimental effect on Ben and the family. And Ben has a lot of other setbacks in life too.
Ben went through a divorce from his wife. Then they say he also had trouble with his business, his construction business.
He'd hired a guy that decided to create a competitor business, and he stole all of Ben's clients. You know, and then it was right at the 2007-2008, you know, real estate bubble bursting. So between that and his employee screwing him over, his business went under. And then it said he got into a real estate business with somebody that was kind of shady. That got him in even more debt on top of his divorce and his construction company going under.
So he said minimum, he was $50,000 in debt, probably more.
I heard $500,000 was the number that I read. So he ends up selling his house. And if he was in real estate, he had a nice house. So he loses his house or sells it, and he pays off a lot of his debt, and he has to move back in with his parents. That's pretty defeating.
The mental state of somebody who has to move back is probably not good, but having a supportive family, that has to make a difference. But still, his family, his parents, they could recognize that he needed something more than just moving back home. Sure, it's a safety net, but they really wanted him to get back on his feet. And Ben seems to be a capable guy, right, back then. So what they do is they arrange to have him move into another house that they have.
It's a condo out in Florida.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So he gets to, you know, have his freedom again. And he'll get some time and some money to try and get back on his feet and get his life going. Which, again, family can do wonders if they support each other.
Yeah. And he rediscovers his old love of diving, scuba diving, and starts logging time and dives at the Vortex Spring, which is not too far from the condo that his parents are allowing him to stay at.
So diving isn't a casual sport. I mean, you're not in your natural environment anymore.
No, I know a few divers. One of them, Kayla, I had her on the peripheral once. She's a diver, and she's very experienced. She posted once, and it looks pretty scary. And everyone was like, yeah, I don't think I would want to do that. I would be too claustrophobic, or I would panic. And if you panic underwater, you die. And that's the whole process of learning how to dive, is to stay calm, stay cool, and don't panic.
So I think it's a testament to Ben staying cool under pressure. He went through some rough patches, but the fact that he's diving again shows that he's getting back on that horse. And he's dating. He has a girlfriend. By all accounts, he's taking care of his debt situation.
Yeah, he sold his house and he's been paying his debts down. According to his family, he had paid it all off, or at least gotten it to such a minimal amount that it wasn't anything worth a mention. He also has a dog named Spooner, who's his best friend. Takes care of the dog, hangs out with the dog all the time. He's a girlfriend. He's getting his life back online. So he had this, I don't know if you call it a trifecta or what, of horrible things that happened to him. You know, his brother dies. He loses his company. He gets into real estate. That goes belly up, and he gets a divorce. This is a whole list of horrible things that could drive anyone to a deep pit of depression. But he looks, or gives the appearance, that he's pulling himself out of this.
Let's go back to the cave, because Ben disappeared after he went diving in the cave on August 18th, 2010.
Now, the divers see Ben at around 7:30, but this resort actually closes around 5 to 6 p.m., depending on the summer hours. So this is after hours that Ben is going down there.
This cave has been measured, but let's be clear about this. The measurement, Justin, is what they've been able to measure, because it goes further back than the number we're going to give you. But the measured distance is 1,642 feet. Because it's, as Shelby says, Shelby McDaniel, he says there's one way in, one way out. Now, there are crevices and things like that along the way. There are larger areas, smaller areas, but literally you go in and you can follow a path all the way back.
So imagine this is a bowl-shaped spring that then is sort of, I guess, cylindrical, and it just goes down deep, hundreds of feet, and then off to one of the sides at the bottom, there's this cave. They say that from the entrance point at the top of the vortex to the cave gate could be almost 300 feet underwater. That's crazy.
Yeah, this isn't for the amateur.
No. So over the course of several months, it's said that Ben has logged hundreds of dives, like 250 dives or something. This is multiple dives a day.
That's what his logbook says. And now you can track what they've been doing. They can track what they've been doing. Maybe they're setting personal goals. They're just keeping a record.
So he goes down on this day. There's a gate, as we said before, to the cave. And you're supposed to leave your dive certification at the front desk to get a key to the gate. There's an employee there named Eduardo. I think his last name's Turan or Turan. And he claims that he's seen Ben go under the gate or jimmy his way through the gate to get into the cave. So on this day, Eduardo's diving around in the vortex with another diver. He sees Ben going to the cave gate. And instead of deterring him or telling him, hey, I know what you've been up to, what does Eduardo do for him?
Well, Eduardo unlocks the gate for him and lets him through because he feels like Ben could get stuck on the gate somehow if he's trying to cheat through there. So he's just going to let him in because he figures that's safer.
He's going to get in there anyways or something to that effect.
Right. But there's a reason why they have that policy, because if you're not cave dive certified, then you probably don't belong in the cave.
Yeah.
You should just stick to the spring part.
There's a,
you know, before the cave.
Yeah. There's a sign at the entrance of the cave with the Grim Reaper on it saying, don't go any further. It's not worth it.
The sign that you're talking about says this: stop, prevent your death, go no further. More than 300 divers, including open water scuba instructors, have died in caves just like this one. Fact, you needed training to dive. You need cave training and cave equipment to cave dive. Fact, without cave training and cave equipment, divers can die here. Fact, it can happen to you. There's nothing in this cave worth dying for. Do not go beyond this point.
I don't know how much more clear they could make it, but apparently Eduardo thought, well, I'll just let him go in this cave.
And this Reaper is creepy because the Reaper is standing there holding a scythe and has a finger that's beckoning you forward with all these dead divers below him.
It's kind of metal.
Yeah, that could be a metal t-shirt. If you're an adrenaline junkie and you know going into the cave is way more exciting and way more dangerous and you think you can handle it, that's where you want to be.
This sign's going to be enticing, not a warning.
Everything, if you're at that gate, everything behind you probably feels like a kiddie pool if you're looking for adventure. So what we do know is that according to Eduardo, he let Ben pass the gate, even though that's breaking policy. And the state of Florida had been considering banning cave diving because of the deaths. I understand that there's a debate about that because there are divers who know what they're doing, who are certified, and should have that right. And you also hate to tell people they can't do something, but it's like anything else. If you know that your odds aren't good, then maybe you need to have some regulation on that.
I look at cave diving and I think if this is a hobby you want to do, even though it's super dangerous, it's like kind of like riding a motorcycle. It's super dangerous, but if you want to do it, you can do it. You know, when I think of an air show, those are super dangerous. And you can have a huge jet flying into a crowd or a building. Maybe we should ban air shows and not divers, but who knows?
Right. And so Vortex Spring has their own policy, so they regulate themselves, right? But if an employee is letting someone pass the gate, even though they're not qualified, then they're opening themselves up to a lawsuit potentially.
They just put somebody's life in danger.
Right. So it's not even get the government involved. It's just if you're a business, you'd think you'd be CYA.
Yeah.
Sometimes Eduardo would wait and just look for the bubbles of divers that were decompressing just so he knew, hey, they're going to come up. Now I can go.
Well, this was after hours. I wonder if Eduardo was thinking, Ben can do whatever he wants. I'm off shift. See you later. Bye. Because nobody waited for Ben that day. So he goes into the cave. And then we have 2 days later, Eduardo notices his truck parked in the parking lot and it hasn't moved. Still locked. They essentially call the police to report a missing person. The Holmes County Sheriff Department shows up. They get access to his truck. They find his wallet with a large sum of money in it. I think it was like almost $1,100. They find his ID. They find all this stuff in his truck that looks like somebody was planning to come back.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
The investigators pull security camera footage from the resort. They find the CCTV footage of Ben walking from his truck over to the vortex. It's not exactly pointed at the vortex. It's the security cameras seem to be more pointed just outward or on the buildings to protect the property, but not to protect the vortex. So it shows Ben entering the vortex, doesn't show him leaving the vortex. Did the police pull every single day for the next month? No.
Well, and they also had footage of him getting air for some of his tanks.
Multiple divers from Vortex Springs, they say, hey, we'll go down to the cave. We'll look for him. So they start doing dives down to the cave. The sheriff's department notifies the family. Hey, nobody's seen your son for 2 days and his truck was found at Vortex Springs. And that's when the family goes to the condo because they know that he was taking care of Spooner, his dog. At the condo, they find Spooner, you know, drank all her water and ate all her food, but he left Spooner. So this is obviously, he's met some sort of fate in this cave at the bottom of Vortex Spring, and all they have to do is just go find him and pull his body up, and this is a terrible tragedy, but, you know, we'll move forward.
Well, they dove looking for Ben, and they found three things pretty quickly, didn't they?
They found decompression tanks, which are oxygen tanks that you use to decompress while you're surfacing, because you can't just dive down deep and then just come up, because you'll get the bends because of the concentrated nitrogen in your bloodstream. So you have to stagger yourself as you rise with these decompression tanks. Now, it said that one was full and the other two were half full.
There was also a difference in the tanks, though, wasn't there? Like, one of the tanks clearly had his name and information on it, but then the two other air tanks that were found, what do you know about these tanks?
It's just claimed that they're his. It's just claimed that these were the ones he was using. But it's not like his family would know what tanks belong to him. We're assuming that he took three decompression tanks down with him. The investigators think, why would you take two half-full tanks down? There's some debate about this. So did these tanks even belong to him? Also, do you need a full tank to decompress? Not really. You're better off with a full tank in case something goes wrong, but you don't need one. Probably a lot of scuba divers out there are screaming right now, but you need to decompress for a certain amount of time, and a full tank has more than ample amount of air for you. But if you're just decompressing, half full probably would work just fine.
So there's a lot of debate about why the tanks would be found where they were found, and a lot of people can't make sense of the placement, but it's weird. On one hand, everybody wants to criticize Ben for being, you know, maybe not the best diver, but then they're saying, well, why would he do this? Well, maybe he has his own system that maybe you don't get, but, you know, perhaps it works for him.
And maybe all three of the tanks were full and some other divers came across them and used them as their own decompression tanks. You know, maybe they use them and that's why they're half full. Now, the question of, did they even belong to Ben? Well, that will come up a little bit later.
See, I find it strange that when the scuba divers are going down looking for Ben, they notice that the gate is unlocked still. This gate is supposed to be locked. This means that if he disappeared on that Wednesday, that it wasn't until Friday that anybody checked the gate?
Well, they wouldn't have locked the gate behind him. And maybe just nobody dived down to do the cave dive. But I would just assume that they would have gone down, because even if they let him in and he left on his own, they would want to lock that gate behind him. Being that it was unlocked, well.
If you unlock the gate for one person, or one person unlocks it and it doesn't get locked again, then the whole time that they're diving in there, anybody else can come along and dive in the cave. This seems like it's not a very good system.
No, I will not disagree with you there. If you're just letting people into the cave and leaving the gate unlocked for days, then what's the point of the gate?
Obviously, cave diving is dangerous, and even sending divers who know what they're doing, there's risk. And they dive for, it seems like 36 days. Off and on, looking for Ben, looking for any sign of Ben. Remember, if he's got tanks with him, maybe they could find a tank, or they could find a fin.
Yeah.
They could find something.
Some evidence that he was even there.
But they don't.
So after almost a month of experienced divers that work at Vortex Spring, they're not finding him. So they start calling in the big guns. And Ben's family is wanting some sort of closure, wanting to know that something, wanting to know where their son is and give him a proper burial.
And also the not knowing. They need an answer. So as you go deeper into this cave, it can get tighter and tighter. In fact, as each restriction is come to in this dive, especially by the fourth one, it gets down to 8 to 10 inches in height. It can be kind of a tight fit. And so you'll have to maneuver your tanks from your back to your sides
Yeah. So a restriction is essentially a small opening, or you know, where the cave is just not easily passable. So you can't just go with a tank on your back because you're, you know, 20 to 30 inches wide. So you have to take your tanks off and then shove them through the hole, hopefully with your respirator still in your mouth, and then go through on your own and then pick up your tanks and drag them along or put them back on your back to continue down into this cave. Meanwhile, there's sand, or what they call silt, on the floor of the cave. And as you're churning that up, it's called a silt out, and you can go blind. Like, you just have no visibility whatsoever, and you can get turned around. You don't know which way's up, and you're in a cave in the dark. This sounds like one of the most claustrophobic inducing horrible nightmares one could do. But hey, if you're into it, cool.
So Ben McDaniel, not a small guy. He's probably about my size. He's 6'1", over 200 pounds.
Yeah, up to 250 pounds. Big guy. So these restrictions, he absolutely would have to take off most of his gear to get through.
Where there's a will, there's a way, right?
Yeah. And some of the divers are saying, well, if you don't have cave diving experience, then how would you know to do this? I'm thinking, well, it's not rocket science either. You want to go through this small hole, you take off your equipment and you go through the hole. Now, is there training to do this properly? Absolutely. Is there training to do this so it's not as dangerous? I'm sure there is. But like you said, there's a will, there's a way.
The Holmes County Sheriff's Office, they did probably the smart thing, right? If something's really dangerous, send a robot. And so they send in an ROV and they take that into the cave. But in a summary, it sounds like it's going to solve this whole thing. We'll send in an ROV and it'll find evidence of Ben, and then we can report back. We'll know what happened. But taking this ROV in to the Vortex Spring, it didn't work out like they'd hoped.
Well, it's tethered to a cable. Again, this cave is hundreds of feet down. So you have hundreds of feet of cable. And I'm assuming that this cable is a little bit beefier than, say, a coax cable, like on the back of your TV. So it weighs hundreds of pounds in this little submersible. You know, you can go maybe 10, 20 feet down, maybe 100 feet down with this cable. And as long as you're in a open area, hey, it's great. But once you're getting around these small nooks and crannies and this cable's getting hung up on rocks, its little engines, its little propellers can't really pull the weight of this cable. So the divers are having to feed the cable to it. When the cable goes taut, it spins the submersible around, it gets stuck, and now it's silting out, it can't see anything. It's a fail.
I'd read that this cord is 2,000 feet long. So I can only imagine having to deal with this as a diver, where you're having to be concerned about your own oxygen and you're going into through these restrictions. So this is no easy task. And according to the sheriff's office, they've never taken an ROV into an underwater cave before. So this is all new to them. So even if the divers have sort of done something like this before, this is no easy feat. And they're doing this because there is concern for Ben McDaniel. Where is he? And they're doing the best they can for the family. And the family helped make this happen because they said, we understand this underwater ROV camera setup costs $54,000. We'll pay you back if it's damaged. But at some point, the divers are saying, you know what? We've tried, but this is becoming unfeasible.
They bring in a very experienced diver on August 23rd. His name is Ed Sorensen. He has over 2,500 dives and was the go-to for recovery divers in Florida.
And he owns a dive shop named Cave Adventures.
He thinks, well, I'm going to go in here. I'll go past where everyone else has gone. He says that he goes 200 feet past the point where the official map ends. So there's a map of this cave and only goes so far. And then it says, like, you know, still being discovered or something like that at the end of this map. And he says he goes 200 feet past that. Now, Ed is 6 foot, 190 pounds. So he's a little smaller than Ben, but he's going through this cave and he hits these restrictions. And he's like, I can't fit through there. I don't know how Ben would fit through there.
It should be said, because you and I talked about this, that Ed can have his opinion and he has his experience. And he'll say, I can't go through this part here. That's not to say that Ben may be feeling like I'm going to conquer this restriction, what have you. That's not to say he wouldn't try it.
I'm sure he would. It's one tunnel, so you would think that there would be markings, there would be some sort of evidence that Ben had been through here. And according to Ed, there's no scuff marks on the limestone. There's no, it doesn't look like it's been passed through. But Ed is doing this over a month later. So things settle. I don't know if he would actually see any of the scuff marks. I don't know if he would actually find any of these things that he's describing.
Yeah, I don't know how he would know for sure. So between Ed Sorensen and this ROV experiment, they're really no closer to knowing what happened to Ben McDaniel, except for Ed Sorensen's of the opinion that Ben's not in the cave.
Yeah, he's like, I've never gone on a dive to recover a body and not recovered the body. So I don't think he's in there.
The other thing that Ed did was he read the logbook of Ben's. And in the book, Ben had been mapping Vortex Spring, the cave system. And according to Ed, and this is Ed with two Ds, by the way, if you're searching for it, he said that the map that Ben was drawing isn't accurate. In fact, it's nothing like the actual cave system. So he doesn't even believe that Ben had ever been that deep in the cave system.
He said there was like a left turn or something that Ben had drawn, and where that place is in the cave, it's a wall. There's no turn there. There's nothing. I don't know if he really emphasizes that it doesn't match at all, or if he just says that there's discrepancies between the two. But then that brings into question, what was Ben mapping? Was he mapping it correctly? Are all these logs he's been keeping accurate? Ed doesn't think so.
Once again, people are criticizing Ben, saying, yeah, he's a diver, but he's not a cave diver. And then, well, is he a map maker? In other words, people might be reading too much into this. In fact, I'd go so far as to say, let's just say that Ben made it up. Let's say he had never been that deep. That doesn't mean he doesn't try this time. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not proof that he won't do it and he hasn't done it this time.
And that's where I'm at. I think that if he truly was going under this gate to get into this cave, well, he was doing it. And according to Eduardo, he'd been doing it. He'd had done it several times. So he's a determined guy.
And speaking of determined, Shelby and Patty, Ben's parents, they're not giving up.
They put a reward out for $10,000. And Ed Sorensen, he thinks that's a dangerous thing. He thinks that you're putting a pot of gold at the end of a dangerous cave. So he really is against this reward money that the parents are putting out. What else did the parents do?
Well, the parents also hired a man named Steve Keen to look for Ben. And Keen in 2003 was the guy that laid the line, the dive line that extended into the cave. He ended up making 7 dives to search for Ben, and he even went past the 5th restriction.
Where Ed says you can't get past.
Again, it's, you know, I don't know how big Steve Keen is. Maybe he's smaller. Maybe Ed is just so experienced, he says, I know where I'm not going to go. I know where no one should go, but that doesn't mean no one will. It means some people will. I mean, we talked about that. You say someone can't do something, someone will say, hold my beer.
Yeah.
And they'll be off and they'll be trying it. And speaking of the fifth restriction, this is really where Shelby believes Ben is. He believes he's past that point. And that's why no one's found his son, is because he's so deep in there that no one's willing to go there to get him. And even if he is there, he could be buried. I mean, remember, the silt, the sand, it can get stirred up, it can move around, it can rise and it can lower, depending on conditions. But
Ed doesn't think he's back there, and Ed does have compelling reasons. He says that there's no evidence that a diver's been back that far because there's no scuff marks, there's no prints in the silt or anything like that. He says that there was no sign of fish or any other animals swarming back there, essentially to eat on the decaying body. And he gives another grim detail of when you're diving in water, you can taste the decay in your respirator. And he says he didn't detect anything like that. He didn't see any fish and he didn't see any scuff marks.
But Steve Keen has a detail that I think is the reason why Shelby McDaniel believes that his son is back there past that fifth restriction. And that is, he said it appeared as if there may have been a cave in there where it had actually collapsed. And so he thinks if Ben had made it past that point, he would never have been able to turn around even.
And he possibly caused the cave in if he was struggling or hit some rocks with his equipment and they were just loose. You know, who knows?
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
In August 2012, Jill Heinerth and Robert McKellen had made a documentary where they went into the cave and filmed the whole thing. On their video, they come across a shovel that's towards the fifth restriction. And none of the other divers had found a shovel. According to Ben's parents, he took a shovel with him. And this shovel looks like a trenching tool. So they're like, oh my gosh, that's Ben's shovel. Nobody else had found it. There was the TV show came out. It was called Disappeared. I watched it. It's pretty interesting. And they mentioned the shovel. And this gave the parents hope of, well, no one else had found the shovel. So that means Ben got that far back and he got stuck. But not everything is what it appears.
So Heinerth and McKellen, they're a married couple. They make documentaries. They became fascinated with this case. This whole thing with the shovel seemed like a lead until it was discovered that Steve Keen, the diver, had actually dropped the shovel. It was his.
And it's so dangerous in the back of this cave that he didn't go back for it. He just left it.
This shovel was actually left in 2003. So it had been there a long time. And it's really telling because it shows you that most people never go that far back. This area right before the fifth restriction is known as the trash room. So we already talked about how dangerous it is and how Ed Sorensen was concerned that a $10,000 reward might be, like you said, a pot of gold at the end of this cave system that people really shouldn't be diving through unless they're certified and experienced. But in 2012, a diver died in the cave. He got stuck in the fourth restriction and drowned. And the rumors were that he was looking for Ben. He wanted that money. Now, word came out later that, I think it was according to his wife, that he wasn't actually looking for Ben, but that story still took. And I think a lot of people to this day probably still believe that this man, Larry Higginbotham, died looking for Ben. But according to his wife, he was not looking for Ben. Yeah. And by that time, it had actually gone up to a $30,000 reward. It did cause the McDaniels to withdraw their reward, because the idea that they might cause someone else to lose their son, their husband, their father was horrific to them. So his parents and his family, they're left with more and more questions. This system has been explored. Many divers have gone through, very experienced divers have gone as far as they can. And I think they're really relying on Steve Keen. I think they believe that the possibility of a cave-in is why no one's ever found the body of their son. And if you think about it, they brought in, at one point, cadaver dogs to look for Ben. Because what if it was foul play, Justin? Right?
Yeah. If he died and or somebody murdered him, something to that effect, and then they drug his body away.
Well, the dogs, they picked up a scent, didn't they? Soon after his disappearance. And then a month after, they picked it up again. The dogs are picking it up around the spring.
On the shoreline, essentially.
You know, this is a large property, but the dogs, they're not picking up the scent anywhere else. So the idea is, if you trust the dogs, that Ben didn't leave the springs. At least he wasn't dragged out of there. But, you know, we were talking about this before. What if someone just heaved him out of the water and right into a truck or something?
Yeah. Well, let's get into the theory of foul play then. I guess we can look at it two ways. Somebody murdered Ben and then disposed of his body, which I don't know why anyone would murder him. I don't know why anyone would have anything against him. So kind of set that aside and just whatever. But let's just assume that Eduardo let him into the cave and then Ben died in the cave. Well, now Vortex Spring is liable. They're on the hook for this death. So is it possible that Ben met an accident and then the employees or somebody decided to get rid of his body to cover themselves? So that would still be foul play. Maybe they took his body up to the surface, backed a truck up to the shoreline, lifted him up into the back of the truck, and left. Well, the dogs would still hit on the shoreline. They wouldn't go chasing down the road or anything. Also, these are cadaver dogs, so they're only picking up on decay, really, not specifically Ben's scent. So they tested the water for decay. They found that there were particles, molecules, whatever, that were present, but they couldn't distinguish if they were human or animal.
There are creatures down there. There are fish.
To me, it's very plausible that he died and Eduardo or somebody was like, we can't take this hit. There's a lot of speculation out there on the internet about this. Even one of the past owners of Vortex Spring had died what they call a mysterious death.
The story of Lowell Kelly is pretty interesting because at the time he had owned Vortex Spring, he had also gotten in some trouble. He had allegedly kidnapped and beaten an employee. What had happened was his employee was accused of stealing $30,000, but Lowell didn't just come out and confront him about it. He said, hey, jump in my vehicle. We're going to go look at a job. And well, he ended up driving to a remote location. They got out and he went and retrieved a baseball bat from the truck. And then he beat him with it. So he was charged with aggravated battery and released on bond. He ended up dying later. What people said was he fell from a balcony at a party. And he died from his injuries.
That doesn't sound very mysterious to me.
It's mysterious because there are people who, of course, jump to, oh, well, he had attacked an employee, probably tried to kill him, and now he's mysteriously died. And so everyone's like, oh, maybe he knew something about Ben's death. You know, if you touch anything, if you're into any kind of illegal business at all, now people can jump to all sorts of conclusions.
They can connect all those dots and come up with that. But it's just a random occurrence that happened that people are connecting to Vortex.
The theories in this case are Ben ran away. You know, he couldn't take it. But we already went over that it doesn't seem likely because he had taken care of most or if not all of his debt. And his family was helping to support him, and he was back on his feet, it seemed like. And he was dating. He had a girlfriend, and he was also exploring his passion of diving. He left his dog Spooner at his place, and he had money. He had, I guess, $20,000 in his bank account, and he had about $1,100 in his truck. This is not a guy who was falling apart financially anymore. And it wasn't a guy who didn't have relationships. He had people around him. Now, it's not to say he's not depressed, but I believe his parents, and I believe from the evidence that I don't think he's running away. I don't think he's faking this.
Oh, and his bank accounts have been monitored. His phone activity has been monitored. The money in his truck, like, why wouldn't you take that cash? Nobody knew that cash existed. He could have just asked his parents or his girlfriend, hey, can you take care of Spooner for me this weekend? All right, thanks. But he didn't. If he's planning this elaborate hoax of his own death, he could have done some bare minimum things to just tie up some loose ends that would not have been that suspicious.
There's also foul play or an accident. I guess this comes down to, how do you feel about Eduardo? I mean, he broke policy by letting Ben pass the gate, and he didn't have to. Now, I haven't been there, neither of you, but when I look at the gate, and there are videos of it, it looks like it's chained and locked. But according to Eduardo, it was happening. Ben was getting past it. We do have Ben's logbook showing that he's been in the cave system there. We know he's not cave certified, Justin. So Eduardo let him in once, or did he let him in every time?
We don't know.
I'm starting to think that maybe Eduardo was letting him in every time. It seems like he's trying to sort of cover his butt, but he's also putting himself at risk. What's to say that the McDaniels don't sue him or sue Vortex Spring and say, look, you were supposed to keep people like Ben out of there. But I think, since they haven't, I'm guessing here, but my speculation is that they haven't done anything about it simply because they understood Ben's passion for diving and they wanted him to do what he loved. This is support. And I think if they went and sued Vortex Spring, maybe that's breaking that support somehow.
Or they don't have a body, so they're not sure that they could actually sue because they can't prove that he died in this cave.
Yeah, that's true. But we do know that Shelby believes that Ben is in that cave system.
So let's talk about that. Is he crammed away in some crevice in the very back of this cave system beyond all of the restrictions that anyone else could get through? According to Ed, there's no way. The ROV didn't find him. There's no sign of anyone getting back that far. He didn't taste any decay in his respirator. And there weren't any fish swarming back there. I get that. And I, for the most part, agree with his analysis. But if Ben McDaniel got way far back beyond where anyone else could get to, well, now you're not going to see the fish swarming. They might be going back there, but you're unable to see this feeding frenzy. I know it's kind of gross. He didn't taste the decay in his respirator. This Vortex Spring is constantly being fed by an underground river. The water is constantly churning, so it's always fresh water. It's not stagnant water. So he's coming in a month later. Maybe he's not tasting it. And the place is so big. Are you going to be able to taste that? According to Ed, yes. I'm thinking, maybe not.
I think Ed has a point. I think it only works if Ben was stuck in a crevice. If you believe what Steve Keen said, and he suspects there might have been a cave-in at the very end back there, well, I think if you're buried under all that sand and silt, I don't think you would notice anything. Because we don't know how much sand and silt landed on him if he was back there. He could be buried and no one would know anything. Because they can't go back there anyway.
I think it's possible that Ben could have gotten further than most. But this is going off of, I don't believe somebody disposed of his body. And I don't believe that he's off sitting on some beach drinking pina coladas, living this other life. So I have to go with this was an accident, or we could even go with he knew he wasn't coming back.
You know, yeah, people can make decisions moments before they are gone. They can make a decision of, you know what, I'm just going to keep pushing forward even though I know I don't have enough air anymore, whatever the situation is.
Yeah, remember those air tanks we were talking about? Well, two of them were different than the third. So it's speculated that Eduardo or one of the employees faked these air tanks, or at least two of them.
Like planted them.
Yeah. To show that he was planning on coming back and he just didn't. And then they just figured, well, no one's stupid enough or daring enough to go back that far in the cave to question our motives here, to question whether or not there was foul play involved.
The McDaniel family had hired an investigator to look into this. His finding was that Ben McDaniel met foul play and was removed from the spring and buried on the property somewhere. I think they said it's an 800-acre property. So, sizable property. But Shelby, despite hiring this guy, doesn't believe it.
No, he still believes that Ben is at the back of the cave, stuck somewhere. So if you go with the foul play angle or somebody disposed of his body, sure, they could have lifted his body onto a truck and then, you know, driven anywhere on this property or driven anywhere in Florida for that matter and dumped Ben. And the dogs wouldn't have hit on that because he was put in a car and driven away. So again, you can speculate how you want here, but it's some weird DB Cooper stuff when you say, oh, Ben faked his own death and is off on his own doing something else when he had so many ties, said had such a strong family structure. The other thing is there's that tie-in of his brother that passed away. The family says he died of a stroke, but then there's this internet rumor, and I want to emphasize that internet rumor because I haven't seen the autopsy report, that his brother died of an overdose. And his family and his parents are misreporting that or lying. So would they in turn lie for Ben if he took off and started a new life or something? I don't know how that logic works, but this is the internet talking, and I'm just trying to convey what the theory is.
Yeah, there's so many ways you could run with that. But I think in a case like this, it's better to keep it simple. We know Ben went into the vortex, and we know he intended to go into the cave. Beyond that, we don't know a lot. I mean, we're trusting the word of the divers that have gone down there. We're trusting the employees who said that they saw Ben, and they're reporting things based on what they said they saw, what they witnessed. I do have my doubts about Eduardo, about these employees, because I don't really believe that he only let him in one time. I'm just going to say that. I don't believe it was one time. You know, Ed Sorensen can say, the map that Ben drew wasn't accurate. There were problems with it, whatever. He's not a map maker, you know? So I believe Ben was probably going back in there and he decided to push himself further. That's what people like Ben, like his brother Paul, that's what they do. They don't settle for, yeah, I've done this before, I'm going to do it again. No, they ramp it up, right? So they push further. To me, if there really was a cave-in, I think that's the only thing that really explains why we haven't found Ben. Unless he died in there and someone removed his body and they carted him off. But that to me seems more difficult because now people have to be quiet. And we're talking about at least 2 to 3 people who would know about this just based on who was there and what was going on. So easiest explanation is that he went into the cave and didn't come out, right?
Yeah. And I hate it when people say, oh, that thing is impossible. Unless it's pigs flying, I think people can put themselves in a really bad situation. You don't have to be a certified cave diver to know enough to be dangerous. And if Ben's not at the back of the cave, then I have to go with the foul play angle or at least a cover up of sorts.
I get the foul play angle from the fact, just from the point that they don't want negative publicity there. I get that. But judging by the way things went down, it didn't seem as though anyone felt that Eduardo had done anything like that. I still am fascinated by the fact that he broke policy and it doesn't seem to be a big talking point with this case.
And even the family doesn't seem to hold him liable.
Right. They had some sort of a marker with, for Ben. And Eduardo swam it down. He dove it down and placed it down there. They're working together, essentially. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is for Ben. And Eduardo's like, yeah, I'll take care of that. But really, he should not have done what he did. Now, as you said earlier, though, there's this idea that people should be free to make their own stupid decisions. And Ben risked himself. But as we know, when you risk yourself and you disappear or something happens and you need help, now other people are at risk. But not everybody's worried about that kind of stuff in the moment. So can we really blame Ben and say, well, if he risked himself and now he's risking all these other divers?
Well, he's not thinking about the other divers, but if he risks himself, that will impact his family if something terrible happens. That should be acknowledged, at least. If we haven't mentioned that Ben wasn't certified enough during this episode, I've just said it one more time. Sadly, the interwebs out there, people bash on Ben for doing this and not being certified, which I get it. You're doing something stupid or you're putting your life in danger. But I just feel like his parents are out there reading these things. Be nice. If we can't feel any empathy for anyone anymore, then what's to stop us every time somebody dies in a daredevil on TV or an astronaut burns up in the atmosphere? It's like, oh, well, don't do that and you don't die. So I think people are a little harsh about Ben out there. The guy was pretty much self-taught for the most part. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, I think the empathy angle is important. But it should still be said, if you're going to be diving at all, you need certification. And really what that says is, don't just read a book. You need to work with an instructor. You need to get your feet wet. After Ben McDaniel disappeared, his parents, Shelby and Patty, prepared Paul's gravesite so that they could bury Ben over his brother. So Paul was reinterred deeper into that grave. And then later, his parents held a memorial for Ben, and they buried a suitcase full of mementos and notes where Paul was buried. Now, they don't have Ben's body, but in June of 2013, they received Ben's death certificate from the state of Florida. To further illustrate just the kind of grief that his parents have been through and continue to experience, it is said that they keep both Paul's and Ben's places where they were at when they died, you know, like where they were staying, just as they were, because their sons are gone.
Frozen in time.
They're frozen in time. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.